Oh, you're back. That comes as a bit of a surprise. Well, since you're here, allow me to enlighten you to the situation. What you're about to hear ain't real. It was made up for kicks and giggles, so enjoy it. And don't be offended if the people or their antics remind you of real ones, because that's purely by happenstance. Now get on with ya.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Red Mullet Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the first episode and are willingly coming back for more. If somehow you are listening against your will, well, we apologize. We'll try to make this as painless as possible. If this is your first time listening, here's the gist. This here's a superhero-centric podcast. It aims to get you familiar with some of the hard-working good guys and gals out there, at home and abroad. And don't be alarmed if we even have a bad guy or gal on the show once in a blue moon. It's all for entertainment and education, so buckle up. Here we go. Another day, another mullet cast. Got another good one for y'all today. Gonna introduce our special guest in just a moment, but first, I forgot to mention in the last episode that you can reach us by email at redmulletmovie@andrewchandler.net or on our Red Mullet and Cowboy Facebook page. I'll try to remember to have CB put them links in the show notes. Y'all can leave comments or ask questions, make requests for who to have on the show, or if you're so inclined, offer to sponsor the show to help keep it going. We ain't opposed to advertising your business for a reasonable fee. Also, if you want Old Mullet to make a live appearance and spin some yarns or do some pep talking, we can try to make that happen too. In other news, CB came down with a nasty stomach virus this week, so he was quarantined and I was left to patrol Isolamento. He's back to himself now, so y'all can save your sympathies. A sidekick ain't much good if he ain't by your side. Well, that was never more evident to me than the other night as I was making my rounds in our neck of the woods. We've been hearing reports of unusual sounds coming from the direction of the caverns. I figured it was just some kids having one of them raves or something, but I decided to check it out just in case. They are technically on a National Forest Park Reserve, so it'd be a shame that there is any sort of defacement or whatnot going on. As I snuck across the boundaries of the park, sure enough, I heard a rhythmic thumping sound, and I could feel the vibrations under my feet. I followed the noise toward what I believe was Wicker Ticker Cave, and as I peeked around the corner, I was surprised at what I saw. Well, surprise may be too genteel a word, more like horrified. There weren't no kids having a party, that's for dang sure. What it was dozens of goats, like baby goats, hopping up and down in unison. Now, you might not think this is something to be horrified at. You might even think it would be kind of cute, but the thing that was causing them to act this way would not be considered cute by any stretch of the imagination. Up on a ledge at the front of the tribe stood a sizable figure dressed in a furry goat mascot-type costume. He was bent over on all fours and jumping around like the real baby goats. All the while, the prepubescent sounds of Crisscross blared the lyrics to their hit song Jump from the early 90s on a portable boombox that appeared to be from the same era. I still can't get that tune out my head. After having a brief but unpleasant flashback, I knew what I had to do. I got down on my belly and crawled around the flock of synchronized hooves. I eventually came up behind the leader, crept to the stereo, and promptly smashed it to bits. The costumed nanny goat screamed and lost its balance, toppling off the ledge and down into the swarm of miniature barnyard animals, which in turn caused them to scream and stampede around the dimly lit cavern. If you've never heard a group of goats scream, it will chill you to the very bone. As the leader fell, the mask became detached and went tumbling into the sea of mutton. It was then that I saw who was behind this devious operation. It was none other than George Bly, the librarian. Everything happened so fast I barely had time to react. George was being trampled by hundreds of tiny hooves. Kids was butting their heads against the walls of the cave. Bleating and screaming and wailing echoed all around, and a low rumble began to fill the space. All the commotion was causing a cave-in, and there was only seconds to spare. I leapt down from the ledge, grabbed the bruised and bloodied form of George the goat herd, and dragged him out of the collapsing tourist attraction. I think most of the goats got out too, but if they didn't, they are now part of the sad monument that used to be Wicker Ticker Cave. George got fined for trespassing on government property after closing hours, and for attempting to organize a hip-hop dance troupe of farm animals without a permit. Today on the Mullet Cast, we are honored to have one of the founding members of the Homogeneous Union of Heroic Ambivalence, a superhero team that has had its fair share of world-saving adventures. Welcome with me, if you will, Professor Hines Hindsight.
Why, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What brings you here today, Professor?
Well, you did, didn't you? As I recall, I was in Cincinnati at a teacher's conference, and the next thing I know, I was enjoying my first hayride in the country.
Well, that weren't no hayride. That was just the back of my pickup.
I see. Well, irregardless, I'm here now and happy to be of service.
Hines, you seem familiar to me. Have we met before?
Oh, I highly doubt that. A hero of my caliber rarely ventures below the borders of your sacred Mason-Dixon line.
Mason-Dixon? You do know the Civil War has long been over, right?
Oh-ho! My dear fellow, do not presume to lecture me on the American past. While I may moonlight as a superhero, my day job has long been established as a professor of history.
Is that so? When was the War of 1812?
The overture or the military conflict?
Either.
The year 1812, Festival Overture in E-flat major, Opus 49, popularly known as the 1812 Overture, was written in 1880 by Russian composer Pyotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky to commemorate Russia's defense of its motherland against Napoleon's invading Grand Army in 1812. The overture debuted in Moscow on August 20, 1882. As for the military conflict between the United States and the United Kingdom, it lasted from June 1812 to February 1815.
Well, you're just a wealth of Wikipediatric information. Tell me, who's buried in Grant's tomb?
Ulysses S. Grant, the 18th President of the United States, and his wife, Julia Dent Grant.
Fair enough. I defer to your trivial pursuit of knowledge.
I beg your pardon?
Professor Hindsight, why don't you tell us a little about the formation of the Homogeneous Union of Heroic Ambivalence and why y'all thought it was necessary?
Certainly. My colleague and I formed the HUHA as a response to domestic violence and as an attempt to improve community morale. It had become evident that the surrounding neighborhoods in which we resided had been hopelessly overrun by gang activity and an overall sense of hopelessness. The local law enforcement avoided those places at all cost, and the governing authorities had thrown up their hands in surrender. We knew that there was not much we could do on our own, but we speculated that perhaps our presence and our example would shed some positive light on a dark predicament.
And did it?
Not at first. Our early attempts at turning things around were met with ridicule and no shortage of threats to our well-being.
But you kept at it.
Indeed, we did persevere. We guarded children as they walked to and from school. We distributed food and clothing and blankets. We performed Shakespeare in the park.
You what?
Shakespeare, the bard, the greatest playwright to have traversed the earth.
I know who he is. What good did you think that would do?
A world of good, I imagine. If music soothes the savage beast, then poetry must needs be the therapy.
Uh-huh. So you helped some folks and things got better?
No. They got worse, if anything. The murder rate skyrocketed, armed robbery escalated, illegal drug use soared to record heights.
Because of Bill Shakespeare?
No, of course not. Because of the economy. Because of systemic racism. Because of social injustice.
Oh, of course. So what did you do? Rodgers and Hammerstein? Tennessee Williams?
Absolutely not. We fought back.
Now we're talking. What'd you use? Tasers? Pepper spray? Tear gas? Martial arts?
Not at all.
Ah, firepower. Nice. Handguns? Snipers? Flash grenades? Motlov cocktails?
I should say not. We doubled our efforts. We established community theater groups, after-school activities, soup kitchens, food pantries, substance abuse recovery programs, garden clubs. But nothing seemed to help. It was as if the more we tried, the stronger the criminal element became. Our team expanded as news of our efforts spread, but it wasn't long before my friend and colleague, the other founding member, grew tired and burned out.
Yeah, what was his name, by the way?
He was known to some as Crisscross Applesauce.
Seriously?
Yes, it seemed like an appropriate nom de guerre, given his desire to assimilate into the culture. Are you familiar with the popular singing duo, you know? Crisscross will make you...
Yes, please stop. Please continue with your story. What happened to him?
Chris wanted to take more drastic measures. He felt that our methods were not effective. It seemed impossible that anyone from the outside could incite citizens to enact positive change in their own environment. He thought that
people would respond more dramatically to an extremist posture from within. I tried to reason with him, but his mind was already too far gone. He went rogue, as they say.
Wow, really? What did he do?
His first act was to form a gangster rap posse. I could never bring myself to listen to their so-called music, but presumably they were pretty good, considering they were picked up by a recording label and released an album. They split up not long after, citing creative differences, and Chris moved on to the next stage of his plan, falling deeper and deeper into a vile pit of his own design.
Eesh. Sounds like a slippery slope.
Indubitably. However, what happened next is his story to tell. My work with the HUHA continued, trying and failing, trial and error. Our actions received many accolades from other humanitarian aids, and eventually we even accepted federal compensation, having been substantiated by the government as a non-profit relief organization.
Chris couldn't have been too happy about that.
No, he wasn't, but we couldn't be concerned with that. There was much work to be done. Our little team had extended beyond our original borders as HUHA chapters sprung up all around the country and even the world. Specialized agents made us a legitimate force for good, and our influence continues to grow.
Very exciting. We're going to take a brief commercial break. When we come back, maybe we can hear about your special skills.
Hi, dear friends. Do you like escape rooms? I know I sure do. That's why we at Essential Escape Experience are committed to crafting a unique and immersive game and event that is sure to be a raging success at your next convention, trade show, party, lock-in, or team-building retreat. Our one-of-a-kind games are portable and affordable, making them the perfect solution to your event planning needs. Look for E3 at andrewchandler.net, part of the Andrew Chandler Network of Creative Services.
And we're back. Sitting here with Professor Heinz Hindsight. Heinz, tell us a little bit about your abilities. What qualifies you to be a superhero?
Well, I don't really like to talk about it, actually.
What? Why not?
Well, it's somewhat controversial.
How so?
Really, I'd much rather talk about our non-profit implementations. Did I mention we sponsor children to adventure camps in the summertime?
Yeah. We get it. Nice stuff for the kids. What's your superpower?
I wouldn't call it a superpower so much as a gift or talent.
That works too. Don't be so modest. What is it?
It's sort of hard to explain.
You're killing me here. I'm on pins and needles.
I suppose it's a kind of ESP.
As an extrasensory perception? Like mind reading?
Not so much. It's more like I can see things that take place before they happen.
Whoa! That must be very useful.
You would think so, only...
What?
Only I don't realize it until after it happens.
Say again?
I can see the future, but by the time I understand what I've seen, it's already in the past.
So you're precognitive after the fact?
Precisely.
Well, what good is that?
Not much, I'm afraid.
Well, no wonder you're hesitant to talk about it. That's completely useless.
Yes, I suppose you're right.
I mean, Cowboy's power udder is worth more than that.
Thanks.
All right, we don't need to belabor the point.
Well, come on. Why even claim to have a superpower when it's about as good as a screen door on a submarine?
Yes, well, I would think that having any supernatural ability puts one in a different category than one who doesn't.
I'm not so sure. Normally, I would tend to agree with you on that one, but in this case...
Take yourself, for example. From what I understand, you have nothing in your arsenal aside from an over-exuberant penchant for self-flagellation. You put yourself in harm's way until someone more qualified can come to bail you out.
Burn.
Easy now. My skills are not in question here. I don't claim to have anything other than what I've developed through my experiences. You, on the other hand, spend your time doing arts and crafts on Uncle Sam's dime.
I say, you are an abhorrent troglodyte. How dare you imply...
Why don't you come down off your high horse for a hot minute and admit the truth?
And what is that, I ask you, since it is you and not me who seems to be the tenured professor with all the answers?
That you're just a guilt-ridden, privileged, can't-hack-it, thespian wannabe.
I never... In all my violent encounters with villains of every kind, I have never been spoken to in such a way.
Let's get to it, then. Since you brought it up, let's hear about some of them violent encounters.
Well, I'm not prepared to...
Yeah, that's what I thought. You know what? You're just a glorified billboard. A walking after school special.
I don't take your meaning, sir.
You walk around with your grand ideas and an extensive vocabulary and expect everyone else to climb up to where you are. Never once do you consider other people's position or how they got there or why they feel the way they do. Chris was right on some level. You can't look in from the outside and try to be someone's savior. You can't walk a mile in someone else's shoes if you're driving past them in your Bentley.
I drive a very sensible Tercel.
Whatever. You're missing the point. Give me one, just one, story of how you affected someone else's position for the better with your tactics.
Very well. Give me a moment.
Take your time, Prof.
I know. There was a time when civil unrest was beginning to peak. There had been an unfortunate occurrence with a policeman and a well-respected member of the community. Tensions were high. The weather was hot. People were angry. They wanted some semblance of justice. I was riding my bicycle home as it was getting dark.
What? I'm sorry?
Never mind. Go on.
A crowd had begun to form outside the convenient mart where the skirmish had taken place. I tried to cross to the other side of the street, but the way was blocked. I dismounted and began to walk, but the populace was now pressing in. I could smell the rage building around me. Someone recognized me and pulled me out of the fray.
Do you hear that?
I beg your pardon?
Music. You didn't...
If I may continue.
I hid behind a dumpster. I heard glass break and someone shouted something I couldn't make out. There was something like a jolt of electricity that ran through the mob and they became like one enraged entity. Screaming, spitting, shaking. I crouched down in the garbage, willing myself to disappear. Someone picked up my bike and smashed it into a car windshield. A gunshot went off, and whereas that would normally send people scattering, it somehow electrified them more.
Is that coming from your phone?
Sir, if you insist on interrupting...
Forget it. Go ahead.
It felt like there was some unstoppable force that had been conjured up, and it would not be sated until it had consumed everything in its path. My eyes were closed. My hands covered my head and ears. I trembled. That's when I saw it.
Saw what?
The future. Or a vision of the future, anyway, but I had never seen that far ahead. I saw a community transformed. A community living in peace and prosperity. Where children played without fear. Where colorful murals covered vulgar graffiti. I smelled lush gardens. I saw thriving families. I heard melodious songs. I felt love and contentment and joy. That's when I knew I had to be a part of making that vision a reality.
I definitely heard something that time. Is that part of your superpower?
I'm sure I don't know what you mean.
All right. So what'd you do?
I crawled out from behind the dumpster and I climbed up on top of it. I dusted myself off and I cleared my throat. Then the only thing that I could think of to say was Iago's soliloquy from Othello.
And how was that received?
About as well as could be expected.
Why don't you give us a taste?
If you insist. And what's he, then, that says I play the villain? When this advice is free, I give an honest, probable to thinking, and indeed the course to win the more again. For 'tis most easy, the inclining Desdemona, to subdue in any honest suit. She's framed as fruitful as the free elements. And then for her to win the more, were to renounce his baptism, all seals and symbols of redeemed sin. His soul is so infettered to her love that she may make, unmake, do what she list, even as her appetite shall play the god with his weak function. How am I then a villain to counsel Cassio to this parallel course, directly to his good? Divinity of hell! When devils will the blackest sins put on, they do suggest at first with heavenly shows as I do now. For whilst this honest fool plies Desdemona to repair his fortunes, and she for him pleads strongly to the Moor, I'll pour this pestilence into his ear, that she repeals him for her body's lust, and by how much she strives to do him good, she shall undo her credit with the Moor. So will I turn her virtue into pitch, and out of her own goodness make the net that shall enmesh them all.
I didn't catch all that over the frickin' bagpipes, but I get the impression that might not have been the most appropriate choice.
You are only too correct. However, I don't think it was mostly heard, let alone understood. Not to mention I was cut short in my recitation by a brick to the occipital.
Ouch!
Yes, I awoke some hours later with a nasty headache, no shoes, and an emboldened passion to bring civility to the unwashed masses.
And we're back to that again. Not sure this is the best place to end the show, but we're out of time for today. Maybe we can have you on again sometime, Hines.
I find that highly unlikely.
Well, the feeling is mutual. Thanks anyway. Best of luck with your hoo-ha squad. As for the rest of you, we hope you'll join us next time when we interview more unsung heroes and unrepentant villains on the Red Mullet Podcast.
This here's been a Monumental Flounder production. Written and produced by Andrew Chandler. Red Mullet and Cowboy created by Jay Choop. For more Red Mullet content, including a webcomic and video clips, go to andrewchandler.net.